some positive signs out of the banking system. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. After a couple of high-profile bank failures, the Federal Reserve started to encourage banks to borrow from the Fed to shore up their deposits and reassure people that their bank accounts were safe. The Fed made some changes to make those loans more helpful. A couple weeks later, it seems to be working. In fact, banks are now finding it less necessary to take out these loans. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now to break this down. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning.
So first, let's talk about how does the Fed lend out money to banks?
Well, traditionally, banks borrowed from the Fed's discount window, and this has been where banks have gone when they couldn't get a short-term loan from another bank. But it's been stigmatized, and banks worried they looked desperate if they used it. Of course, when banks borrow from the Fed, they have to put up collateral, something the Fed would take if the bank defaulted on the loan. And the Fed lends out less than that collateral is worth for discount window loans. That's the discount part of the loan.
But now there's a new, more helpful way banks can borrow from the Fed.
Yeah, it's called the Bank Term Funding Program, Sabri. And under that program, the Fed lends out the full amount of the bank's collateral. And this is a big deal because the value of the bonds banks use as collateral has fallen over the past year.
And remind everyone, why is the Fed doing this? Why make it easier for banks to borrow more money?
Well, some banks, especially the smaller ones, they really need cash right now. And some depositors are withdrawing their cash from these banks. The Fed wants to prevent another run on a bank like we saw with Silicon Valley Bank, which, of course, failed. The Fed is trying to reassure depositors and calm things down a bit.
But banks, they did borrow a bit less from the Fed over the past week. That's good, right?
Guarded good news, Sabri. Banks borrowed just a little bit less, but still more than normal. So clearly the banking system is still under stress.
All right. Thanks, Nancy.
You're welcome.
The CEO of TikTok, Shou-Tzu Chu, testified before a House panel yesterday. It did not go well. Chu tried to reassure lawmakers the social media platform, which is used by 150 million Americans, could be trusted on issues ranging from protecting children to concerns over political influence from the government of China. Lawmakers, many of whom want to ban the app, were roundly suspicious and at times hostile.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
Earlier this month, after 10 years of negotiating, countries at the United Nations hammered out a new treaty that has the potential to change how the world's oceans are governed. It's called the High Seas Treaty. It deals with what happens in so-called international waters, which basically receive little protection under international law. So the idea is to set out a way to manage ocean conservation, set up marine protected areas, but also govern how certain resources can be used, and in some cases requires that profits be shared between countries. The treaty now needs to be ratified by at least 60 countries to go into effect. Here to help us understand this is David Bosco, professor of international studies at Indiana University Bloomington. Hi, David.
Thanks very much for having me.
So if the idea is to bring some kind of order to the high seas, one key aspect of this framework is around resources, both protecting them and exploiting them. When it comes to using resources in the high seas, what are the new rules? What would they be?
So the new rules are that if you're going to take, say, marine genetic resources, some kind of genetic resource from something that you found on the high seas, you know, some kind of marine organism, that there has to be some kind of sharing of that with the international community. How exactly you share it is very much left vague in the new agreement, but ideally, you need to kind of register what you've done on the high seas, and there should be some kind of profit-sharing mechanism if you make money off of that high seas genetic material.
When we're talking about marine genetic resources, what does that mean?
So it's essentially a genetic resource from some kind of marine organism. So to give you an example, there's some sea sponges, for example, there were kind of genetic sequences in there that were used to develop anti-leukemia drugs. So I think that's the kind of thing that the agreement has in mind, that there's some genetic sequencing or some organic resource from the oceans that is then used to be commercialized.
Is there a risk that no one's going to want to explore that if they have to share the profits?
Yeah, this is a point that some of the developed economies have made in these negotiations. And so this is something that's going to be worked out. How do you keep that balance between keeping commercial incentives? Because often there would be a lot of investment involved. It's not just a harvesting of the genetic resource. It's then money that you got to pour into figuring out how it can be used, how it can be commercialized.
What other potential economic implications would you see coming out of this treaty?
The other area has to do with, for example, shipping and shipping costs. And here you get into the question of environmental impact statements, because that's another area covered by the treaty. Any kind of marine research, I would say, is something that could be affected by this new agreement.
The oceans are so vast. Do you think that even if this agreement is ratified, it could be enforced out there?
Yeah, the enforcement is a big question. You've got to have countries that are willing to invest resources into monitoring compliance. And that means, you know, coast guards, that means potentially navies that are willing to get involved in this. That is something that very much remains to be worked out.
David Bosco is a professor of international studies at Indiana University Bloomington, who authored the book The Poseidon Project, The Struggle to Govern the World's Oceans. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much for having me.
Our executive producer is Kelly Silvera. Our digital producer is Jarrett Dang. Our engineers are Justin Dueler and Nick Esposito. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.